It's After the Snow, the podcast. I'm your co-host, Dave Mays, founder of The Source Magazine, co-founder of this new platform, Breakbeat Media. And I got my co-host, the one and only Freeway, Ricky Ross.
What up, Dave?
What's up, Rick?
Man, ready. Let's get going.
How's it going? How you feeling?
Oh man, you know, I've been under weather a little bit, but I feel better, you know. That Omaha trip was took it out me, man. Them dudes was doing like three clubs a night.
I was yeah, like, man.
My goodness. Yeah. I didn't sign up for this.
They got it going on in Omaha like that, huh?
Man. It's small, but you know, they party, man. And you know, they got a little bread down there too. You know, that's what Warren Buffett is from there.
All right. That's a good claim to fame.
Yeah. So you ready to get started with this show?
So yeah, you know, After the Snow, we did season 5, which ended a couple weeks ago. We had a special edition last week with our first guest cast member. So we definitely want to say thank you. Big shout out to Christine Horn, who plays Black Diamond in Snowfall. She was great to have, and you know, really. Appreciate and
a great person.
Concert. Yep, very talented. Got a lot of things going on.
Yeah, a lot of stars. You know, they be having they nose up in the air, and you try to get them to do something, man. And you know, I almost gave up on stars, man. Like I don't even want to do nothing with most of them because they too hard to get to. And then I don't know. They just. It's a rough business when you're dealing with the stars.
All right.
But I know you know you done dealt with more stars than I have. So.
Yeah, been a long time, dealt with a lot of them. But yeah, Christine was great, so we want to thank her. Yeah, very humble. That was an excellent show. So we're going to have some more guests from Snowfall coming, including her partner in crime, Dallas, coming up soon. And we're working on a few others. But what we're doing now is we are going back to season 1, where this all started a little over 5 years ago, or just about 5 years ago. Summer of 2017 is when Snowfall premiered for the first time. So Rick and I watched the first episode of season 1. It's called Pilot. We're going to get into talking about that episode and things around it and how you felt about it, Rick.
No doubt. I'm ready.
I remember, you know, watching the episode when it came out because I had been reading about Snowfall coming and I was anxious to see it. So I watched it right away and I really liked this first episode. Of course, this was when John Singleton was still alive and was, you know, involved hands on in the show. You know, there's a lot of interesting things that we can get into that happened.
It was more L.A.
Yeah, what are the things that you saw that made it feel more L.A. to you?
Well, you know, it was simple. You know what I'm saying? There was not a whole lot of extra activity going on. You know, some of the stuff that we can see in L.A. is a girl coming up to the door, knocking on the door, looking for, you know, somebody that she just had sex with, who she's probably claiming as her man now. And then his woman is in the house and she don't like it. Like, you know, like, fuck, you knocking on my man door. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, stuff like that. You know, the ice cream truck coming down the street with all the kids following the ice cream truck. You know, one of the kids trying to steal something off the ice cream truck. You know, that was L.A. You know what I'm saying? That was a real L.A. feel, you know, with the palm trees and with Franklin and Leon and all of them walking down the middle of the street, and they was just having fun, you know, just enjoying life for what it was, you know. That gave me more of a feel for L.A. than I've been getting from
some of what we seen later. Yeah. Did that neighborhood remind you of the neighborhood you grew up in?
It didn't. That was more of the West Side. You know, John likes shooting on the West Side. he don't want to come to the East Side. You know, South Central is a little more east than that is. Maybe a little worse area, you know, at one time. Even though L.A., the whole L.A. now is a lot safer than what it used to be. But that was more West Side, closer to Baldwin Hills. And I didn't see that. I just know by the looking at the houses and the palm trees, you know, that's closer to Baldwin Hills. Kind of like where they shot Boys in the Hood.
Right. Yeah, it does. It did look like Boys in the Hood, the street and everything.
Same area. Same. He used the same area. Now, I guess he gets a deal over there.
They have a date they show on the screen at the beginning. It says June 14th, 1983. So I'm wondering, like, is there any significance that you know of to that date? Or you think they just threw that in there just to try to make it seem like specific? And what do you remember about June of 1983? Anything in particular?
No, nothing in particular. But I don't know what significance it would have had, you know, for them using that date.
When did you first start kind of getting into the coke game? Was that in 83 or was that earlier or later?
No. I got involved around 79, 80.
Okay.
In the 79, beginning of 80 is when I first, you know, start dipping. But my intro into the drug business was a lot different than what they showed on the screen. You know, you don't walk up to no drug dealer and the first time you meet him, you ask him for a kilo, you know, and get it. And then, you know, you get one day to sell it and you never sold cocaine before. That's a pretty big feat, I would say. You know, they started me off with a $50 rock. So and for me, that was a feat trying to sell that. So I could imagine how I would have felt if they would have stuck me with a kilo. And then the other thing that really was a shocker for me was the price that he got the kilo for. He got the kilo for $16,000. During that time, kilos were probably like $45,000, $50,000 a kilo.
Oh, wow.
So they messed up on that part as well.
Yeah. I think he only had to pay Avi 12 and he got 16 from, you know, that the lady at the club, Louis's old friend, but I think he only had to give Avi 12. So yeah, he was getting it super, super cheap back then.
Yeah, see, they jumped the gun to where, you know, when we started getting it at those prices, you know, we were buying hundreds at a time, you know, with cash money.
Right.
You know, you just don't start off on your first kilo on credit for no $12,000, unheard of.
Right.
But that's the story. That's what got everything going.
So one of the things, you know, we see when Franklin gets introduced to Avi, his buddy, Rob, brings him over to Avi's house, and there's a lot going on there. And Franklin kind of proves his courage, at least, to Avi. But when he makes his pitch to Avi to front him the kilo, he says, you know, I think that this will sell in my neighborhood. And Avi's like, you know, people don't have the money and they're not even buying coke in wherever you're from. Now, I know we talked about that on some other episodes, but you know what?
Yeah, they stole that from me because I had, you know, when I first started selling, everybody told me that, you know, you couldn't sell cocaine in that area. So they definitely stole that line from me. That's my line. I don't mind, though. They can have it. That was another thing. I couldn't believe that they was going to have him to stand there with a bulletproof vest on and let somebody shoot him. But and that's that's another thing when you don't really earn your way, you know, you don't work your way up. You're looking for somebody to give you something. So, you know, you got to pretty much take whatever they dish out, you know, and how they dish it out. That's why I always been wanting to earn my shit. I don't want nobody giving me nothing. You know, I work my way up from the $50 rock to where I got to. But I was shocked when I saw him standing there, you know, and willing to allow somebody to shoot him. I'm like, nah. And even without him,
he didn't actually. In the end, he didn't shoot.
Nah, with just the thought of it, you know, I wouldn't even, you know. Yeah. I mean, Dave, what you think? Would you?
No.
Somebody told you, man. You want to get a raise up in the world, man, put this bulletproof vest on, let me shoot you. I mean, what kind of thinking is that? I mean, who would even think of some dumb shit like that, you know? Even on Avi's part, you know, I think that was a dumb scene. It really had no significance to what was going on. You know, it was just another way of trying to dramatize, you know, a scene.
Well, one of the things, you know, we learn in this first episode is that, you know, Franklin went to a white school in the suburbs. And of course, that's how he got friends with white boy Rob, that brings him to Avi's house. You know, I think there's some connection with your life as well, because I know you were playing tennis and that brought you into a lot of places that you wouldn't normally have been. But did you go to school in any of the suburbs or anything like that?
No, I went to Dorsey. It wasn't a South Central school, but it was still a black school. Now, what I heard happen is that John also took some of Bo Bennett's story and added into Snowfall as well. You know, he kind of mixed our stories up. What the word on the street is that he mixed the stories up. You know, Bo was a pretty big guy too.
I see. And did Bo go to a white high school?
He did. Yeah, he went to a white high school. He got bussed out of L.A.
Got it. One of the things we see also in the very beginning I wanted to ask you about is they go to this underground wrestling match that's taking place. I was curious if anything like that was going on in L.A. back in the 80s.
Nah, not that I knew of. You know, we used to have the wrestling here. Probably like the 60s. We had the wrestling, you know, at the Olympic Auditorium and people would go there, you know. But no, wrestling had been gone for a while from here. And never did I hear about any underground wrestling matches. No.
Have you ever been a fan of wrestling?
When I was a kid, you know, I went to a few. I used to go to some of the wrestling matches, you know. But, you know, that was because my mom and my auntie and them, you know, they were fans of roller derby and wrestling and that kind of stuff. So as a kid, you know, if they tell you to come, you just go, you know. And but as I got older, you know, I became a fan of having money. You know, I started liking money at a young age. So that's really, if it didn't make any money for me, I really didn't want to pay much attention.
So yeah, there's a scene where we see Franklin working in the corner store, Cho's corner store. I want to talk about that too, the Asian-owned corner store. But one of the things we see, Melody shows up, gets a bottle of wine. Franklin's saying, you know, he don't drink, and you know, he says one of the things that motivates him is making money. And I thought that was something, you know, that you guys definitely had in common.
No question. Well, you know, when you're in that line of work, though, you really can't be, you know, drinking and getting high and all that stuff, because people are looking for you to be slipping, you know, so they can take advantage of you. You know, one of the things I always thought about, you know, to be drunk, you know, and you wake up and you're in somebody's trunk. So, you got to try to keep your head on tight and really keep it swiveling, you know, when you're looking from side to side and behind your back, because it's a cutthroat business that you're in. You don't ever know who is out to get you. You know, your best friend today, you know, can be your snitch tomorrow, your robber, the setup guy. You know, there's just so many pitfalls that go along with that industry that you know, I take my hat off to anybody that can do it. You know, it's not easy. You know, it's a lot easier ways to get money. But, you know, when you're young and dumb, you don't know no better. You know, you can't do better. So, but
right. So, you know, the Asian corner store is another thing that, you know, John Singleton and the Snowfall writers and producers, you know, they put a lot of little nuggets in there that, you know, acknowledge certain issues that, you know, we've all kind of heard about over the years through hip hop and, you know, and other ways. But, you know, of course there's a long history of, you know, problems between black folks and the Asian owned stores in the community and the racism and, you know, Latasha Harlan, the girl got shot in her back by the Asian, you know, woman store owner. So, you know,
and the lady only got probation.
Right.
Got probation. Right. And then, you know, one of the things that really hit the news right during that time was another guy had killed a dog, I think, and they gave him 2 years for killing, for animal cruelty. And they give this Chinese lady probation, you know, for killing a 14-year-old black girl. And she was from my neighborhood, too. So
yeah,
it was kind of close to home, you know. The fella say I knew her, but I didn't remember her. I was in jail during that time that took place.
How do you think, if at all, that's changed? Like, you know, is that still a dynamic in the hood out there in L.A., a lot of Asian-owned stores in the hood? Or
yeah, you know, pretty much, man, blacks don't really own anything out here, you know, in the hood. You know, we just... they just survive in there, you know, and it's really gentrifying anyway, you know. You know, right now to stay in South Central will cost you like $3,000 a month. So not many people can afford that.
Right. Right.
You know, you gotta be making it in order to be able to pay $3,000 a month. So but yeah, still, you know, still the majority of the stores are owned by others, you know, non-black.
Yeah. So we meet Leon in this episode, and he shows up at that corner store when they're closing down. He makes mention of, yeah, how the owner of the store, I think he said, pulled a shotgun on him for stealing some candy or something or whatever. So that was another reference. And, you know, Leon is, he's fresh out of the jail or the juvie, as he says, and he's still very raw. You know, he's walking around with the boombox, blasting it, you know, on the bus in front of people. And, you know, Leon's definitely, you know,
being rude,
a little ignorant. Yeah. Wild.
Well, you know, in my story, Ollie had been in jail when he got out is when we really cranked up. So he hadn't been in juvie, but he had been in the county jail for a burglary. So definitely that's a resemblance.
And Ollie was basically your right hand guy at that time.
Correct.
Few other things I noticed, you know, in the episode I wanted to bring up and talk about. You know, we meet Franklin's next door neighbor. Well, of course, the daughter, Melanie. Looks like they're, you know, have a little crush on each other. But her dad, Andre, is a police officer, a sergeant in the LAPD.
Yep.
And I was curious about, you know, how many black police officers you remember back in those days. Were there a lot of black police officers in your community and living in your community?
Not living in the community, but there was one in particular. You know, I know he used to come up to the gas station at 76th gas station, and he would be sitting there and pretty cool cat. You know, he didn't really bother nobody. Actually, we called him Action Jackson. I don't know why they called him that, but that was just a name that he had. Mm-hmm. He would be just sitting at the gas station chopping it up with Greg. Greg ran the gas station. Greg was an old low rider, somebody who I looked up to a lot. You know, I had a lot of respect for Greg. Well, really, everybody did in the neighborhood, and Jackson as well. I had a lot of respect for him. So, but no, I didn't know any cops staying in our neighborhood at that time. I don't think they could have got away with staying in the neighborhood back then. You know, they back then was a different time.
Yeah. But what were there mostly white officers that were kind of like patrolling your community? And
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And still today.
Yeah.
Not many black officers on the force.
Interesting.
I bet the numbers is really low.
Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to run down a few of the other characters that we meet, you know, in this first episode. We talked a little bit about Auntie Louie, and we see her, you know, her wild self. She beats the girl up that comes over there banging on the door for Jerome. She's apparently on drugs. Jerome makes a reference that she's smoking sherm. She's carrying a gun. You know, she's pretty raw and wild herself in this first episode.
Yeah, that was. You got girls like that in South Central. You know that they ride. You know? Yeah. And smoking Sherman was definitely a big thing back during that time. Sherman was a drug of choice before the cocaine really pushed it out. I never wanted to sell Sherman, you know, because I saw the effects that it was having on people. You know, yeah. It was making them lose their mind, and I thought that it was a negative look. So I stayed away from it for the most part.
Yeah.
But when I first started selling cocaine, it was a drug of choice.
And sherm is PCP?
PCP and sherm is the same thing. I think sherman is when they put it on these leaves to make it. And they call it sherm too when it's when they dip it. It used to be a cigarette. Mm-hmm. There used to be a sherman cigarette. Hmm. And they would take the Sherman cigarette and dip it into the formaldehyde. I think that's what they call it. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So we also meet Teddy, you know, so the whole story is being set up here. There's another CIA officer that's partying, you know, at a big house in the hills with his Nicaraguan connect. And apparently, you know, they've started this whole arrangement where the CIA is assisting the Nicaraguans bringing cocaine into the U.S. and using those proceeds to finance the Contras, the war in Nicaragua. And of course, the CIA guy overdoses while he's, you know, partying hard on coke. And the Nicaraguan,
they don't take him to the hospital.
Exactly. Yeah. Alejandro is his name. And he don't want to take him to the hospital because he doesn't, you know, want
to
risk.
It's easier to kill everybody in the house.
Yeah. But I mean, when he,
you know, that's what he did. He killed all the girls.
Oh, he did. I didn't know that. Wasn't sure about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, from when you look at Teddy's investigation, remember Teddy was saying that
he found an earring at the end.
Earring, blood in other places.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just one particular place where he found the blood at.
Yeah. You know, Alejandro shows up at Teddy's place of business and tells him that, you know, Logan had let him know he was the guy to go to if there was any problems. And so Teddy looks, you know, he's pretty scruffy, and he's on the outs with the CIA, and he sees this as an opportunity to get back in. And, you know, Alejandro says, Logan told me you're a patriot. So, you know, you would support this thing that we're doing. And at first Teddy's, you know, surprised and skeptical, but he comes around and, he's basically selling his boss on this plan. Like, we got to keep selling these drugs and helping win this war in Nicaragua. And, you know, I'm the man to do the job.
Yeah. No doubt. You know, that scene reminds me of the Pulp Fiction. You know, in the Pulp Fiction where they call a cleanup guy and he comes by the house and he cleans up all the mess. Because, you know, Teddy is wiping blood off windows. Right. And, I mean, he's looking for blood everywhere that it could possibly be. You know, I guess. So if there is ever an investigation, you know, it'll pass the test.
Exactly.
You know, he's bleaching everything. And that gave me the feel of a Pulp Fiction type of scene, you know, where they got this guy and he's cleaning the mess up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that scene.
No, I do. Yeah, absolutely. That's a classic. Yeah. Definitely reminds me of that. So we also meet Franklin's mom, you know, Sissy, and we see, you know, she's working some kind of a job where, you know, Franklin doesn't like the way she's being treated. And I guess her boss is, you know, not only rude, but possibly abusive because her sweater is ripped up. And she got to change up her whole tone when she answers the phone and, you know, yes, sir. Whatever you say type of thing going on. But and we see Franklin, you know, as kind of a mama's boy. You know, they seem to have a pretty close relationship. But it's interesting to see when Franklin dips off, Sissy goes in the room and pulls a gun out of her purse and some cash. So she's not as clean cut as you know,
as you maybe you would
think. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I didn't remember that part.
Yeah. She pulled a gun and a big wad of cash and stuck it in her drawer, hid it away in her drawer. You know, they also make mention of Franklin's dad. They actually see Franklin's dad, who's homeless, when him and Louis are driving home from selling the key to the lady at the club.
Yeah.
And
Louis asked him if he want to talk to him.
Right.
And he Franklin says, rejects the offer.
Yeah, but you see him crying, you know, he's shedding a few tears as they drive off. So we understand that, you know, that whole lack of having a father or whatever happened with his father is something that, you know, has deeply affected him. And I think, you know, we'll see more of that as the story goes on. But that's also something that, you know, is often talked about as one of the problems in the community is, you know, not having male role models in the home.
Yeah. And not even knowing your father, you know, I grew up without even knowing my father. So have him, at least he knew who his father was.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So one thing that also really I remember when watching this episode the first time really stood out to me was the music. And we've talked about that before and some of the other shows, but they really did an amazing job with lots of great music throughout the episode. Yeah, there was some really classic materials from Nucleus Jam on it to some Donny Hathaway to Cutie Pie. I think that's One Way, and a bunch of really great songs that really, you know, make the show feel just feel good.
Richer. It makes it feel more in during that time. You know, music puts you back into that state of being.
Yeah. And
I think they did a good job at that with the music this time, you know, in this particular episode. The music.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite songs and artists from the 80s that you were listening to back then?
Oh my goodness. Marvin Gaye, Smokey Robinson, you know, everybody, Motown, you know, mm-hmm. Motown era was definitely cracking. Who else, man? You know, Run DMC, you know, when they came out, was killing it. You know, Lil LL Cool J. Who else, man? Lakeside, you know, Gap Band, Rick James. I mean, you know, the list go on and on, man. Right. It was, you know, the 70s and the 80s was a rich time for music. You know, Michael Jackson, like everybody, you know.
Yeah.
Prince, you know, it's just a rich time for music, you know. The Delphonics, you know.
Yeah.
Who else, man? There's just so many of them, man. It was just so rich with music. You know, I could probably sit here and give it a little thought, man, and go on and on and on, you know.
Well, where did you listen to music? Did you ride around listening to it a lot in your car?
No, I did not. My mom would play music. My brother was a music fanatic. You know, he bought every record that came out. You know, when it came out, he got it. When I started having money, you know, yeah, I would listen to music, you know, just listen to the radio as I rode around in the car, pretty much. But, you know, I've never been like a big music fan where I go out and buy the CDs. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever bought a CD or a cassette player or any of that. I don't know if I've ever bought one.
I was a music fan from a pretty young age, and you're a little older than me, but I can remember, you know, saving up my money in the late 70s, probably early 80s, you know, to go to the record store to buy 45s. That was the first thing I was buying. These songs I would fall in love with, and I would go get the 45s.
I have bought records. Okay. When I was younger, you know, we was trying to do the DJing thing. You know, we had our little turntables and we started our little garage parties and we'd have two records, you know, Parliament Funkadelics and Earth, Wind and Fire.
who's we and what were you doing? Were you DJing or just, you know, hacking the crowd up or what?
I was more like the organizer, you know. I've always been kind of like the leader of my crew, you know.
Okay.
Where they all kind of do what I say do, you know, what I think is the best thing for us to do. They kind of always follow suit, you know. Never had to be, you know, the actual one doing whatever. I wasn't the one DJing. You know, I may not be the one driving the car, but you know, I had my input inside of whatever decisions was being made at that time.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we'll keep talking about music because I'm pretty sure, you know, it continues in the rest of the episodes. We're going to see. I remember that really from season one.
And we already know you got a fetish for the music.
Absolutely.
Music. That's how you started the source.
Yeah. Playing music on a radio. And, you know, we could talk about that for a while. We won't bore everybody. We're running out of time here for this week's episode of After the Snow. But, you know, this was a classic, obviously, the very first episode of Snowfall. Again, came out in summer of 2017. And, you know, the show has continued on, five seasons in, 6-1 coming. And we're going to be sticking with you guys, continuing to go back through season one. And we'll get into season 2, 3, and 4. And hopefully that'll take us right up to when season 6 will come out. And, I want to thank everybody who's been tuning in to After the Snow. You know, stick with us. We're going to keep bringing you guys, you know, interesting shows and more guests and try to delve into a lot more topics. After the Snow, Breakbeat Media.
You already know. Ricky Ross and Dave, what's up? Yeah,
exactly. That dynamic duo. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Peace.